Good morning, and welcome to the Unitarian Fellowship of Regina. No matter who you are, no matter where you are from, no matter who you happen to love, no matter what your theological perspective may be, or where you are at in life's journey, you are welcome here. We are a lay-led congregation who gather here each Sunday to explore a variety of religious, philosophical, social action, spiritual, and scientific topics. Presentations are often made by members or friends and sometimes by guest speakers or visiting ministers, as today. My name is Jamie Struthers, and I'll be the service leader for today. Before this church was here, and before this city was here, these lands were sacred to the first inhabitants of this land. We are honored and privileged to gather this morning on Treaty 4 territory, the ancestral lands and the homelands of the Soto, Nakota, Métis, Dakota, and Cree peoples. We commit to a thorough examination of the nature and effects of colonialism, and further, to walk a path of reconciliation. What I'd like to do at this moment is to introduce our guest for this morning, the Reverend Ann Barker, who is with the CUC, is our Western District Congregational Life Lead. And I'm going to turn the proceedings over to Reverend Ann for the moment.
Thank you for hosting me this weekend. Our chalice lighting words come from this book, which is a personal favorite, and if you want to peek at it at coffee time, you're welcome to. It's called Our Covenant, The Lay and Liberal Doctrine of the Church, the Spirit, and the Promise of Our Covenant by the Reverend Alice Blair Wesley. And it made up the series of men's lectures. So every year there is a series called the men's lectures. There's six lectures in this book. They're available online. You could access them all online in the men's lectures website. This is from 2000-2001, but it is timeless. The Reverend Alice Blair Wesley, in this book, Our Covenant, paraphrases UU theologian James Luther Adams. Strong, effective, lively, liberal churches, sometimes capable of altering positively the direction of their whole society, will be those liberal churches whose lay members can say clearly, individually and collectively, what are their own most important loyalties as church members. Note, not what are their beliefs, as in a creedal church, rather, what are their shared mutual loyalties in a covenantal church. Now, Wesley goes on to say, we understand way deep down that freedom in the church is absolutely necessary and must be inviolable if we are to have in our lives one community among all of those of which we are a part, in which we can, with honest, though sometimes conflicted hearts and minds, examine together our own deepest loves. We need to examine together our own deepest loves that we can try to see whether we are living by right loves or by some misplaced, inappropriate love for less than worthy realities. The Free Church is an organization we establish and join so that we might help one another to find over and over again, in 1,000 varying time frames and settings, what are our own worthiest loves, and therefore what those loves require of us, and if we would be loyal in the most meaningful sense in what we do, in our actions, and in the way we live. So we light our chalice this morning in the spirit of collaboration, that it always remains our purpose to work together, to help one another, both within and between our congregations, to be serving our worthiest loves and doing what those loves now require of us.
I don't have anything to say.
Well, I do, but it might not be interesting to anyone.
I have secrets inside of me and struggles, and I don't know if I'm ready to share them.
I want to hear what you have to say.
I want to speak of the deeper things together.
I want to hear what you dream about, what you hope for.
I want to know how you came to arrive at this resting point on your journey.
What if I speak and you don't understand me?
I will listen and listen again until my hearing becomes understanding.
What if I can't find the words to share the world inside of me?
I believe that wise words will emerge from you.
How can I trust you to hold my life stories, you who I may not even know?
By knowing that, as I receive part of your story, I will give you part of mine.
Well, how will this work? What will happen? What awaits us?
If we can find out anything by the beginning,
let us begin to listen and trust and to know one another more deeply. Those are the words of the Reverend Erica Hewitt.
I will now turn the proceedings over to Reverend Ann.
I want to preface this by saying this is my first time speaking from a podium with new glasses with more ranges of vision. So if you see me stall for a moment, I'm still trying to figure out where everything is. Life is always changing around us and within us, but this moment feels different. Everywhere we look, familiar structures and supports seem to be shifting, whether it's by choice or by necessity. It might be an update or a refreshment. It could be a total transformation, and we're witnessing a lot of endings. But so much is shifting all at once with remarkable intensity, enough to shake our confidence, enough to interrupt our ordinary patterns and to capture our collective attention. Things that were familiar, things we felt like we could count on, seem to sometimes be slipping through our hands. Now, I worry sometimes that maybe this is just how aging works, that slow or sometimes sudden realization that the way I experience the world or expect to experience the world is no longer consistent with reality, that it's me overreacting, that maybe I'm the one that's out of sync. But then I hear the same thing from people of many ages, people of same and different paths than mine, and I hear this refrain of uncertainty or puzzlement or alarm. Things we expected to endure, to be passed on to future generations, that have meant so much to people and that still have great value, are threatened with extinction. Everything from our environment to our work ethic, our cultural norms, to our political freedoms. The eroding expectations of bodily autonomy, along with a rising disregard for public health and safety, and not least of all, our precious faith communities. This morning, we will examine where we are and consider how we may have arrived here and dabble in a little bit of theory about what the challenge could be. But most importantly, we're going to look at our Unitarian Universalist, into our Unitarian Universalist mirror, and ask ourselves, what draws us to this faith? What tools do we have to meet this moment? And what magic might there be in taking an unprecedented leap? So let's dive in. To begin, a glance backwards to our creation. As a people, we come from many different places, many identities and experiences, many unique moments of formation. Each of us is our own collection of history and culture and possibility. And when you have a whole bunch of personal collections and you put them together, you get this vast gallery that expresses who we are as a movement. all of us, all together, along with our religious ancestors, created and continue to create Unitarian Universalism. Now, to be clear, I am using the broad brush when I'm painting the spectrum of who makes up our religious ancestors. I mean every being, every single being who influenced the ways we gather and practice. Now, obviously, that means your congregational cohort, the specific people who started and have maintained Regina Unitarians over the years, whether they are still with you or they have left their gifts in the memories of this place. But also every person who ever bumped up against Unitarian Universalism, whether they were an ally or an opponent or even simply indifferent. Because human beings and our structures and systems are not only based on the lessons we absorbed, but also defined by the experiences and the ideas we have rejected. We're a product of what we choose and what we are avoiding. Sometimes consciously, sometimes not so much. We are shaped by our ancestors, recent and ancient, who built the systems that led us here. We're shaped by the land that we inhabit, which inspires us with its beauty and is also forcing us to adapt to its evolving challenges. We're shaped by the cultures surrounding us, dominant and marginalized, because no one escapes the impacts of culture. In one sense, we're the very designers of our existence, and in other ways, we are acted on by outside forces, sometimes having little or no choice at all. We can create exactly what we want, and we're never entirely in control of what happens next. Now, part of our special UU magic is that being intentional designers in a world that doesn't always grant us the freedom to fulfill every goal means that we are both a powerful blend of profound vision and practical realism. We know how to get through a tough situation with determination and fortitude and generous helpings of compassion and creativity. Unitarian Universalists, tell me if I'm wrong, are a people who don't like to be told what to do or what to believe. We like to make our own decisions, make our own way in the world. We won't allow ourselves to be trapped by or forced into the shape of someone else's ideas or framework. Instead, we do the research. We do the testing. We check to see if an idea has merit and value, and then we choose whether or not to adopt it. And then we aren't trapped. We're adopting beliefs and practices because we agree with them. And we're doing that collectively. We want a sense of control over our surroundings, our commitments, and our religion. And while we don't want to be told what to do or what to believe, we do still know that what we do and what we believe matters. It matters a lot. Even when we don't have control or power in a situation, we choose to hold tight to our beliefs because they have the integrity to sustain us through difficult times. And we hold true to what we believe are our right actions, because right action isn't just a convenient behavior. One of the most profound ways we clarify our commitments and that we believe they are right is when we find ourselves willing to risk something on their behalf. This makes me think of that scene in the movie Gandhi, where worker after worker stood in line, knowing that they would be physically struck down by the authorities at the front of the line. Their belief in the principles of self-determination and fairness were stronger than their fear of tyranny. They believed that they were doing the right thing for the right reasons, and if enough workers stood up to the oppressive authorities, things would have to change. They risked their comfort, their safety, their livelihoods, even their lives, for a truth that meant more to them than their individual well-being in the moment. They believed in a future collective well-being that transcended their own immediate experience. Unitarian Universalists are people who believe and who value principles and practices that have passed the test of our individual and our collective discernment. We count on ourselves and we count on one another because there is always more to learn and understand than what our own limited experience could hold in isolation. And because understanding changes and we are committed to evolving together. Now, the Reverend Alice Blair Wesley calls this working together to discern our real and right loves. We will not be fed a religious identity without question. We earn our identity through hard work and collaboration and critical thinking and nourishing practices. And maybe most importantly, we carry hope or faith that humanity can be redeemed. Because what we do and believe matters. We are all interdependent, so we owe one another our best. And that doesn't waver in challenging circumstances. We can't always control outcomes, but we can work to control our inputs. We push back against beliefs and systems that harm our neighbors and our governments and our environment and ourselves, and we won't always win. But we can work to always be proud of our effort. Now, you would think that given our principled stance and our willingness to learn and grow and evolve and our sacred commitments to the interdependence of all life, that our communities would be thriving and bursting at the seams right now. And yet, it seems like things have gone a bit sideways. We find ourselves in this unprecedented moment where religious participation is declining, even as spirituality and the need for meaningful connection is soaring, and we don't know exactly where we fit or how to fit into this cultural moment, but the world needs us more than ever. Somehow we need to make ourselves visible and valuable to a culture that has all but dismissed us. I have a theory about what could be happening. You're welcome to fight me at coffee time. But first, before we go to the theory, we have to get in the mood, okay? You have to work with me here. We have to get in the mood. I want you to just settle in however you're most comfortable. I won't tell you what to do. But just imagine with me how it feels to take a brave risk. So the invitation is to take yourself back, maybe way back, to a time when you were first taking a leap. Maybe when you got that first job, or launched a business, when you started a new relationship, or had a child, or moved out on your own. Or it could be more current. It could be when you tried something that felt important to you, but you were a little nervous about it. And you bravely took some of those first steps. So what we're reaching for is that feeling of the hungriness of necessity. You need to do something. When something is important but also feels like it's a big reach, you have to be brave in this moment. When you had to make it work because you didn't have a backup plan. When it was exciting to start a project or a new life together, and maybe you didn't have a lot of resources, but you just knew you could make it work whatever it was. So the stakes were high, but not impossible. Can you remember or imagine feeling that way in your life? So that's the spark, that little gem of possibility that we nurture and we take care of and we set out to explore where it's going to take us. So bring that little spark inside you to my theory. We're going to call that creative or vulnerable creative energy. Not just creative, but there's a little nervousness attached. And when we're in a vulnerable, creative energy, it's exciting. It's a forward kind of motion. And whether we have to or we want to, it can feel like a big deal. We're dreaming, we're plotting, and creating something vital. We have an exciting, an important idea that we believe in and we want to bring it to life. When we're in this kind of space, an idea or a project, it just begins as a spark. It's a flash of potential and possibility. Sometimes this is really hard work, but where there's a spark, there is something special. Every one of our congregations and fellowships was a spark. We have a vision and we are determined to bring it to life. We do this when it matters to us. This is where we put our whole heart and soul into a project. This is how new ideas and new communities are born. There is a spark. And as it gets fed and as it grows bigger, it really begins to sparkle and shine. It becomes visible. It's faceted and substantial, and the effort that you make helps to strengthen its stability. It's not a little spark anymore. It has a whole presence of its own now. Look around you. A whole presence. And your care and tending and hard work help it to reach its potential. It embodies the vision. It flourishes. Here is the part that can get complicated. When we create something new and beautiful, and it becomes substantial and it flourishes, we really grow to love and appreciate it. And we want to care for it and protect it and help it to endure. And so we humans will sometimes start to shift our efforts away from growing and feeding the sparkle and start protecting and defending the sparkle. We create a beautiful thing out of necessity to meet an essential purpose, but sometimes the shape of the thing, the creation, can start to become more important than its original function. We sometimes lose sight of the purpose in our attachment to the creation. So we had a spark and we nourished it into something that sparkled, and now we have a sparkly thing that in many cases can start to feel a bit static. If we are willing to dust and polish and care for it, it stays beautiful. But at what point does it shift from being a beautiful, functional creation to becoming a beautiful heirloom or artifact? In the worst case, it gets dusty or tarnished or tossed aside, even broken. But in many cases, our sparks become sparkles. They continue to go on, but their essential purposes get diminished or lost or relegated to another time. They can be lovely remembrances, but their vitality diminishes. There is less interest in them, except in a historical sense. I have a not churchy example. If our original spark of light was being nurtured into a lamp factory, producing beautiful kerosene lamps that lit dingy offices, those lamps would sparkle and bring light to the dark spaces that they adorn. But over time, kerosene was no longer practical. There were simpler and cleaner alternatives. And lamps may still be beautiful, but they become more decorative and less useful. Now, the business could consider repurposing. It could create electric lamps. They still bring light to dark places. They're still using the creativity and skill of the makers, still providing an income for its workers. Or it could choose to do something completely different, using its ingenuity and resources, and launch a different kind of project. Or the owners could retire and just politely close things down. Or they could keep making kerosene lamps until the business fades into obscurity. The original lamps are no less beautiful. Their original value is not canceled by the changing culture around them. There is no shame, and in fact, there is still value to being a beautiful heirloom. But you can't realistically keep producing new heirlooms and still have a business. A therapist once lent me a book called The Slight Shift. And this simple study described how when you get behind the wheel of a car and you want to go in a straight line down the highway, you are always making adjustments to the steering wheel, right? Even if the road looks perfectly straight. Because there's bumps and there's rocks and there's gravel and gooey bits. There's always going to be uneven ground or slippery patches. Maybe your steering pulls a little to the left and you need to keep correcting to the right. Just enough to keep you on course. So the author argued that all of life is like that. Everything we do, every decision we make, even the tiniest ones, have impacts. And what might seem like a little bump right now can take you way off course in the long run. Now, you've probably encountered this with construction or sewing or geometry or drafting, right? Just a hair's difference at one end of the angle can mean a huge difference at the other end of the project. So what the author insisted was, well, it's human nature to want to set a course and hold exactly firm, straight forward. There is an adjustment necessary always. And we put ourselves in peril when we get too determined to hold the line. He went so far as to say every single choice we make, large or small, sets us on a path that is either beneficial or harmful. I had a hard time chewing that one, right? That seemed like a lot. It either leads us to where we're headed or it tips us away from our destination. Sometimes we choose a detour. There's good reasons for detours. But to be fair, taking one step off the path isn't likely to make you topple over the edge of the cliff. But enough steps in the wrong direction and down we go. So what he was trying to draw attention to was that the little things, they may not feel like they're deal breakers, but they can add up eventually into unintentional crises. I think that's how, as a world and as faith communities, we have come to this moment. Little things that have a big impact later down the line. In retrospect, it seems probable that somewhere along the line, humanity measured wrong. Globally, when we measured the oceans and skies and decided that they were big enough to absorb all of our waste. Locally, when we decided that different kinds of people could be treated or mistreated differently without consequence. religiously, when we get comfortable with beliefs and actions and ways of being and forget to continually put it to the test of an evolving reality. Are these our real and right loves? What are we called to in this moment? Adrienne Marie Brown, in her book Emergent Strategy, writes, "Here you are, in the cycle between the past and the future, choosing to spend your miraculous time in the exploration of how humans, especially those seeking to grow liberation and justice, can learn from the world around us how to best collaborate and how to shape change." We're almost there. For so many of the struggles that we are experiencing right now, in churches, but also in culture and business and mass production and political failure, people started with a spark, built something that sparkles, got attached to the familiar and the structure more than the vital purpose, and lost connection to the life-giving function of their vulnerable, creative energy. The good news is the spirit of vital creative energy is always available to us, and it's easier to attain in the company of creative companions. I am not ready to be an artifact. I'm not ready for my faith community to be an heirloom, even if it is a treasured heirloom. I want us to be art, not artifact. Art is always moving. It's never frozen in time. As I struggle to figure out how to still be valuable and relevant, as I age and become something different than what I was, different than what new generations can bring to the process, I realize that I am not less valuable. I am differently valuable. I am repurposing. I am evolving. We have that powerful gift of helping one another to discern our real and right loves again and again and again. And we will make mistakes. Our work is about finding ways to be together and to be healthy and to be well. And because we all make mistakes, I know I make a lot of them, especially when the pressure is on, then it's also about how to reconnect when we get separated. How to bridge differences, because without that, we are always working at cross purposes. And how to help people find their way in life in ways that can be connected to their inner selves, their outer world, and everything that moves between the two. And so in service of this important work, we continually ask ourselves, what is it that Unitarian Universalism has to offer the world? What is our gift? What makes it important enough for us to matter? Meaningful enough for you to pour your life's energy into its thriving, into its surviving? What problem in the world do we answer? What treasure do we bring? What makes us vital? What makes us shine? May we help one another to strengthen that vulnerable creative energy, which is so necessary if we are to refresh and renew our sparkle into a sustainable, thriving source of light for a world of beings who so desperately need us. Let us be more art than artifact. There is great meaning in this moment, We are meaning-making people. May we find it together. Blessed be.
Our final reading for this morning is a piece by Stephen Schick. It goes this way. Is the fire going out? Not in your belly, for you are still alive, but in your soul. That place where dreams fuel commitment, where longings shape action, where meaning flames purpose, where passion ignites and rekindles your life fire. If your soul smolders, dream on till you flame like a chalice of hope.
This is my favorite Unitarian Universalist book in the universe. If you don't have one here, I highly recommend it. It's called Spilling the Light. The original version is attributed to Teresa Soto, Reverend Teresa Soto, but they have changed their name to Reverend Julian Jameca Soto, and the new print edition has the correct name on it now. So it's a Skinner House publication. They're like $8 or $10, and there's a bulk discount. It is my favorite book of readings in the universe. There must be fuel. There must be a spark, and there must be oxygen. We would have principles and ethics, the fuel of the fire we would light. The spark is what passes between us, along with our aliveness, our possibility. Spirit moving in us is our clear invitation, embossed, addressed, sealed with wax, tied with ribbon. The spark is the seed of a fire that must be treasured and tended that it may bring the light. We have passion. The air without which nothing thrives, least of all the blaze of covenant, justice, and kindness that we would illuminate, both with who we are and what we do. All of these, an invitation to bring to life the blaze of liberation that is meant to light our way and to dispel the fog of cruelty and grief. It brings us instead to a hearth around which we gather to be nourished, energized, and warmed, and where we get ready to disperse, enlivened. The Spark Between by Reverend Soto. So we extinguish the chalice flame this morning, but each of us carries it as a spark within us that we tend and care for and feed, and together we light the skies.